charismatic, passionate, has integrity, humble, servant, inspiring, faithful, persevering, positive, flexible, driven.
This is not about theory. This is about application. This is what you're trying to be. This is who we are that call ourselves leaders.
I'm Dave Ramsey, and you're listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hogan, your host for the Entree Leadership Podcast. I am happy to be back with you. Today on the podcast, we're talking to New York Times bestselling author Marcus Buckingham. Marcus has worked with the world's most prestigious companies, including Facebook, Toyota, Coca-Cola, and Microsoft, just to name a few. His compelling message has also drawn attention from numerous media outlets. He has appeared on The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Today Show, Good Morning America, and has been profiled in The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and Harvard Business Review. His latest book, Standout, has launched not just a new strengths assessment, but an entire productivity platform based on a research methodology to reveal your top two strength roles. We're so excited, and it is a huge honor to have Marcus on the podcast today. Marcus, how are you?
I am excellent. Thank you for asking. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. It is an honor to talk to you. I have read your information and followed you for years. You are definitely a renowned voice in this area of leadership, so I thank you for all that you do. Well, listen, now most of our listeners are probably already aware of the strengths movement and the importance in identifying your strengths, but let's talk about why that's important.
Well, when you think about leadership, you have to get to the issue of return on investment, ROI. As a leader, you've only got two things that you bring to your particular challenge, your company. You bring your time and you bring your talent. And if you think about your time, the question for you with all of your people is where should you invest your time to get the best return on the investment, whether that's time in yourself or whether it's time invested in coaching and developing your people. And the strengths-based approach simply says, look, you have, as a leader, you have strengths and weaknesses, and so do your people. Everyone's got strengths and weaknesses. Where will you get the best return on the investment of your time? Will you get the best return by investing in your strengths, or will you get the best return by investing in your weaknesses? And as obvious as it sounds, the best team leaders realize, you know what? I will learn and grow and develop the most in the areas where I'm already strongest.
Mm-hmm.
So my strengths, and this is where it gets super counterintuitive, but the best leaders seem to realize this, that my strengths are my quote-unquote areas of opportunity for growth. My weaknesses are weaknesses, and I need to manage around them. I need to deal with them. Sometimes, you know, we got to have table stakes, and I got to just meet the table stakes. But you shouldn't call weaknesses areas for development. You shouldn't call weaknesses areas of opportunity, because as the best leaders know, your weaknesses are your areas of least opportunity. They're the areas of you and the areas of your people where they'll grow and develop and learn the least. So it's one of those things which when you first hear it, I mean, it just feels obvious. Well, of course I'm going to invest in my strengths. But then when you peel the onion a wee bit, you realize that we actually have an awful lot of systems, performance management systems, training systems, learning systems, that call weaknesses areas for development, areas of opportunity. And the best team leaders seem to realize that that's not true. If you want a best ROI, the best ROI is going to come from finding out what your strengths are, and then leveraging them intelligently.
Wow. Now, you mentioned in your book that before the strengths finders movement, the psychology had plenty to say about what's wrong with us, but almost nothing to say about what's right with us.
Yeah, psychology was very good at pinpointing pathology. Why are you neurotic? Why are you psychotic? Why are you depressed? Why do relationships go bad? And we put therapies together to help you become less depressed, to help you have better marriage, better relationships. And that's valuable. No question, that's valuable. But I think what my mentor at Gallup understood, and subsequently what Marty Seligman, who is the president of the American Psychological Association, came to understand as well, is that good isn't the opposite of bad. Happy isn't the opposite of sad. Joyful isn't the opposite of depressed. That if you want to fix depression, by all means study depression, but don't imagine it will tell you anything about joy.
Hmm.
If you want to fix failure, by all means study failure, but don't imagine that fixing failure will get you to excellence.
Hmm.
If you want to stop customers from being unhappy, then by all means, study unhappy customers. But don't imagine that will teach you anything about happy customers. So what psychology realized is sort of what the best leaders have, I think, intuited always, is that excellence has its own patterns. And if you want to understand really happy customers, or if you want to understand joy or meaning for yourself, or if you want to understand what makes a great marriage, you actually have to study excellence, because it's not just the opposite of failure. And that was a huge insight for psychology in general, that you actually have to study the thing that you want to create more of. You can't infer the thing from studying its opposite.
Right, right. Wow. Now, you say in the standout assessment that it is really a delivery method for innovation. And I had a chance to thumb through it, and it's exciting. But what did you mean by this delivery method of innovation?
Well, standout is a book, but there's a code in the book. There's an internet code that enables you to go online. You can go to Standout. You just Google Standout. It'll take you right there. And you can take an assessment. You can take a strengths assessment, the latest cutting-edge way of identifying your comparative advantage as a person, which is fine. We do that all the time, whether we take something like Standout. Some of you, I'm sure, some of your listeners will have taken Myers-Briggs. Some of them might have taken the assessment that we built while I was at Gallup called StrengthsFinder, which all of which give you an initial result, kind of an initial description of mm-hmm. where your strengths lie.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what I realize is that in the area that we live today, we are able not just to find an initial result for you, but because we now know what your strengths are, we can drip you content. We can, over time, every week, give you an idea, a tip, a trick, an innovation, something that is relevant to you. Because we now know what your strengths are, we can give you a customized stream of innovation ideas and content about how you can put your strengths to work more effectively. So the first understanding, I suppose, was that, gosh, we don't have to give you a result that you put in your bedside drawer and never look at again. We can actually use your strengths assessment results as an algorithm, and we can then program a whole bunch of content for you that helps you leverage your strengths more effectively. So I suppose that was the first thing. This is an ongoing channel that we can deliver good things to you. And the second thing was, when it comes to innovation, we need to be super careful as leaders. You take someone like Steve Jobs, who was famously unique, right, in his approach to leadership. One of the unique rituals he had was he was on stage personally launching every tiny new little product development that they brought to market. He was up there explaining why the bezel was ever so narrower, or he was the one on stage just pounding his chest, talking about how exciting this new little tweak was. That was a ritual that was totally authentic to him. And now we have Tim Cook, who's a very different kind of person. And if you're not careful, if you're Tim Cook, you try to employ the innovations and ideas and techniques that fit Steve Jobs.
Yes.
And so today we see Tim Cook on the stage and we look at him and we go, that's not authentic for you, Tim. Whatever you're trying to do on stage, and I get why you're trying to do it. I mean, God bless you and all, but it's not quite working. So the thing we realized about innovation is, don't tell people ideas that fit someone else. We need to customize the stream of ideas we give you so that they fit you, because otherwise you might end up looking like Tim Cook trying to be Steve Jobs, and the first thing you'll lose as a leader if you try to do that is authenticity.
Yes.
And the moment you lose authenticity, we, your followers, stop trusting you anymore.
That's immediately what I thought. I thought, you know, being lacking authenticity will cost you a lot of things in the eyes of your team, and trust being the first one. And I realize that, and you're absolutely right. It's almost like a fish out of water, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks wrong.
Yes.
I mean, if you think about what you try to do as a leader, you try to create an environment that is predictable for people, where they will follow you into any future that you're taking them, because they can predict how you're going to react.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to follow you into the future, we are legitimately a little anxious about this future because it's unknown. So as we look around and we go, well, am I going to follow you? One of the ways in which we calm our anxiety is we look at you and we decide whether or not your style, your approach as a leader, is predictable enough so that as we move into this future, although there may be very many unknowns out there, one of the things we'll know is who you are and who we're following.
Yes.
So your consistency as a leader becomes part of why we feel comfortable following you, which means, you know, authenticity is tied so closely to people's feeling like you are a coherent, not perfect, you're not a perfect human being, but you're a coherent human being, and we get who you are. Even if occasionally we don't like who you are always, at least we know that there's going to be some predictable patterns and reactions. And that means that as we move into the future with you, although, as I said, there are many unknowns, your style as a leader isn't one of them. We know who you are. And that's why authenticity is more important than perfection as a leader. We don't expect perfection.
Hmm. That's profound. Now, I want to point out, when you were talking about kind of the assessment, how you customize, I wanted to let our listeners know that in the book, Standout, not only does it give information based on the different styles, but it also gives you information on how you're at your most powerful, how to describe yourself in an interview, how to make an immediate impact, how to take your performance to the next level. And it gives that information based on your assessment and where you are. So you're really able to personalize it and begin to apply it in your life, which that is revolutionary.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So just to put some detail to that, Standout measures you on nine strength roles, we call them. And it pinpoints your top two. And it does it through something called a situational judgment test, which means we don't ask you to rate how you see yourself. We're not going through our list of nine strengths and saying, how much of this do you think you have? On a scale of 1 to 5, do you think you have lots of it or not so much? We're not doing that. Instead, we're throwing situations at you, like, one of them is a friend at work passes your idea off as your own. What would you do? And then we give you 32 seconds as you look at four choices. What would you do? Would you tell her that that's wrong? Would you communicate to everyone that actually it was originally your idea? Would you pass it off because, hey, look, I can always come out with another one? I mean, what would you do? Every one of these choices looks good. They look sensible.
Mm-hmm.
But they're different. They're meaningfully different. And yet you, the test taker, you don't actually know which of the nine strengths any one of the options is linking to. So you don't know. When you try and pick and you've got that timer going, so there's a bit of stress as you try to go with your top-of-mind reaction, you're just picking based upon your natural filter of the world. And so we do this again and again. Situations are thrown at you. You're not sure what any one of the options are measuring. And so over time, we just capture your repeated reactions to these somewhat stressful situations.
Hmm.
Which means that when you get done and we tell you what your top two strengths are, those top two strengths might not be exactly how you see yourself. I mean, who knows what the hero is like in the narrative of everyone's own mind. But what it will do is it will be how other people see you. It will be how you come across to others. So what we were trying to do with Standout was go, look, I don't know how you see yourself, but this is how other people see you. So you can either come across this way to them accidentally, or you can come across this way to them deliberately. And that's what the best leaders do. So in the results, once you've got your top two, yes, we want to tell you, here's what you should do to take your performance to the next level. Here's what you should do to explain yourself in the job interview. Here's what you should go do. We wanted this to be really prescriptive. Go try do this if you want to be more intentional about bringing your best self to work as a leader or as a team member.
Right, absolutely. And it's all about being intentional in the application of that information. But listen, Marcus, I want to tap into your brain here. And if I'm listening to this podcast and thinking, I don't use any of my strengths in my current position, what would you advise that individual to do?
Well, two things. First, I would probably start with something like standard to help me have a language to describe what my strengths are.
Okay.
Because part of this is being conscious.
Yes.
Being conscious about what you bring. And the second thing I would say is, remember that if you look at the most successful people, you know, I'm sure everyone's got some successful people that they know in their life. You look at them and you go, oh gosh, you're so lucky. How did you find that job? It just seems to fit you so perfectly. It just plays to your strength. Gosh, it plays to your strength. So almost like it was made for you, that job. How did you find that job? And actually, that's the wrong question. They didn't find it. They built it. The most successful people take generic job descriptions, and then little by little over time, armed with an understanding of what their strengths are, they deliberately, little by little, week by week, push their job toward the best of themselves. They take the room for maneuver, and we've all got some room for maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask people, you poll people, and you say, do you have the freedom to modify your job to fit your strengths better? 73% of American people say agree or strongly agree that they do. Now that means obviously there's 27% of people who think they're in the wrong job, but and you may be one of those. If you are, it's a different conversation. But if you're one of those 73% who says, yeah, you know what, I've got the freedom to maneuver my job to fit my strengths better, what that means is every week you're looking for opportunities at the level of activity, not in the level of job description, but what am I actually doing this coming week? What are the missed opportunities that I have to leverage my strengths this coming week? Who can I partner up with to take on some of the things that don't strengthen me? Are there any systems I could put in place to take care of some of the things that drag me down? What new skills could I learn to make my strengths even more valuable to my team or my colleagues? So it's really one of those things where, as Peter Drucker said, every leader needs to ask themselves this question, what am I going to do differently on Monday? What am I going to do differently on Monday? So if you feel as though your job doesn't currently play to your strengths, it might be. It might be that you're in the wrong job. You might be one of the 27%. But if you're one of the 73, then the question for you is, what are you going to go do differently on Monday?
Hmm.
And that doesn't mean you're going to radically change all parts of your job in 1 week. It doesn't work like that. It rarely works like that. It means that incrementally, every week, you're going to keep thinking, what are the activities that I'm doing? And how can I ensure that gradually I play to my strengths more effectively over time?
Now, as a leader, if I'm out running a small business, I have a lot of things that I'm responsible for. And some of those things are going to take me outside of my strength zone. So how do I handle that? Because there are things that have to be dealt with. And I'm the leader. I'm responsible. So what do I do when I have those tasks outside of my strengths?
Well, some of them you're going to have to just suck it up and do.
That's right.
I mean, the world isn't made for everyone's perfect enjoyment. We're all probably going to have 25% of our job is stuff that we just have to suck it up and do. And that's okay. That's part of being a leader, is that you're going to have some of that. For the remainder, the simplest answer to the question is find people that are strengthened by the very things that weaken you. So much of the most effective leaders' success is caused by intelligent recruiting. You don't treat people as you would like to be treated. You treat people as they would like to be treated. You try and figure out, gosh, there are some people who are wired so differently than me, and they've got strengths in the very areas where I'm weakest. And I will deliberately, as quickly as I can, even if I need to take less money off my business, I will hire good people who fill my gaps. I don't just mean skill gaps. I mean strengths gaps, who
mm-hmm.
think differently from me or are driven differently from me or may build relationships differently from me. I'll find people like that so that I can then be freed up, not to work less, but I can be freed up to think about how I can leverage my strengths in more intelligently in my business. The best leaders are, there's a way to think about it, you've got to think about sharp. The best leaders are not well-rounded. They're sharp. Their teams are well-rounded precisely because they figured out where they're sharp and have surrounded themselves with people who are sharp where they're blunt.
Now, Marcus, that's profound, because we've been taught in school and in grad school and all these places that we need to be well-rounded.
Yeah.
That goes against the grain, my friend.
Well, yes, and I think it's one of the... You know, if you look at what's in leadership development in grad school or indeed in business, we tend to develop leaders by defining a whole list of competencies that leaders are supposed to have. Then maybe you'll have a 360 survey that you'll do, which will get peers and direct reports to rate you on these competencies. And then we pinpoint the gaps you have, and we tell you that in order to grow as a leader, you should try and acquire the competencies you don't possess. But the truth of the matter is, if you look at the best leaders, they do not have all of these competencies. There's no long list, or even a relatively short list. There's no short list of competencies that every great leader has. Because if you look at the best leaders, every one of them, I mean, Steve Jobs is a very sharp, unique individual. Bill Gates built exactly the same company as him. Exactly the same, except he's an utterly different kind of leader. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that Microsoft is the same company as Apple. I mean that they both built software companies. So they weren't radically different businesses. These people, at the same time, in the same country, built two companies doing pretty much the same thing, and they did it in radically different ways. There's no list of competencies that Bill Gates has that also Steve Jobs has. They've got totally different approaches. The only thing that Steve Jobs and Bill Gates have in common is followers. They built a whole bunch of people that were prepared to work really hard for them. So if you look at leadership, what you see when you study leaders, not leadership, when you study leaders, actual people, you find variation. You find idiosyncrasy. The best leaders don't share a whole bunch of similar dimensions or competencies or skills. They don't. Now, we can sit around as academics and write a long list of competencies and skills that we think every leader should have. We can write that list, but by the time you're done with your list, it's not entirely clear what problem you've just solved. You've just written down the perfect leader. But that's about as useful as sitting down and writing down the perfect basketball player. But what use is that? In the end, you got to go, Shaquille O'Neal, who are you, buddy? How do we get the best performance out of you?
Yes.
And you've got very unique skills, and yeah, ideally you'll be able to shoot more than 53% in your free throws. Yes, ideally you would, but you don't. It's like saying, Bill Gates, yes, it'd be great if you could be more like Steve Jobs. Yeah, but, yeah, it would be great, but you're not. So this whole notion of well-roundedness as a leader, the acid test of that is look at leaders around you, and you'll rarely, if ever, find somebody that has a perfectly well-rounded profile as a leader.
Huh. And you said that. You said that successful leaders have the ability to find people that are willing to work extremely hard for them.
Yeah.
As a leader, Marcus, how can I facilitate that? How can I get my team to work really hard for me? What do I need to do as a leader?
Well, the risk of oversimplifying it, the two most important skills that you have as a leader is, number one, and this is going to sound so obvious, but I'm going to say it anyway, and we don't do it. It's weird. We don't do it. The best leaders do it, but most don't. You got to check in with each of your people every week. Check in with each one of your people individually every week. Do a one-on-one every week. Not once every 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Not once every 6 months, for crying out loud. Once a week, you should have a strengths-based conversation about the work, the upcoming work. You look at the best leaders. They do that. Not as a group. Team meetings, yeah, but our average leaders do team meetings too. The best leaders realize that if I want my best people to work really hard for me, I got to check in with them every week. Not to give them feedback. I'm not giving you feedback. I'm giving you coaching, work-focused coaching, as in, what are you doing this week and how can I help? That's it. When I say check in, that's all I mean. What are you working on this week? How can I help? Every week I'm doing that. It's the single most important ritual to put in a company. And that's not in addition. I'm not saying you should do this in addition to leading. I'm saying you study the best leaders. This is leading. Checking in with each one of your people once a week, just on those two questions. What are you working on? How can I help? That's what leading is. If you're doing a whole bunch of other things as a leader and you're not doing that, stop all the other things. Just do that.
Wow.
So that's number one.
Okay.
And again, you look around at all these big performance management systems, they don't do any of that. There's really very little in place as you look around where we've got a way to help leaders have really short, tight, focused check-ins. But that's a secret.
Hmm.
And then the second thing, of course, is vividness about the future. paint me a picture of the future through stories, through heroes, through the rituals. I mean, Steve Jobs on the stage, that's a ritual that helps me see what the future is going to be like. Or whether it's the values on the walls, or whether it's the anecdotes you tell about customers. If you're going to drag me into the future, if you're going to say this is the land of milk and honey, then like Moses, you've got to say this is what the milk will taste like. This is what the honey will taste like. I got to help you see it as vividly as I can see it. So if you keep doing these one-on-ones individually, these check-ins, then the other thing is, as a group, you've got to paint a vivid picture for me of where we're all headed. Hmm. And I don't mean generalities about where we're going. I mean, get me down at the 10-foot level. You're dragging us into the future. All right, well, what does this future look like? Who are we serving? What are they seeing in us? What are we doing? Who's doing it now? What do we want more of? Give me vivid detail about the future, and I will follow you into that future with confidence.
Wow. That's very good. The area also in the book, in the standout you talk about, is the edge and the multiplier. For our listeners, can you kind of define that and expand that for us?
Well, what I was talking about there is that strengths do a number of different things. They give you an edge over people. What you're looking for in life is a comparative advantage. In your business, you're looking for that.
Mm-hmm.
What is my comparative advantage as a business? By the way, all modern-day economics is based on, some of your listeners will know this from their Economics 101, it's based on the 18th century British economist David Ricardo's law of comparative advantage, which says that the most effective countries figure out where their comparative advantage lies in the world of international trade, and they leverage that comparative advantage. So that really, that's also what applies to you as an individual, as an individual leader. You got to find your edge. You exploit your edge. Where are you marginally different and better than other people? You don't have to be massively better, because once you start with an edge, you can sharpen and sharpen and sharpen and sharpen it until it's really hard for other people to combat you.
Hmm.
So to start with, your strengths are, you've got to find an edge. And it's funny, you can be so specific about where your edge is. And you can get off your edge if you're not careful, like an ice skater. You can tumble off your edge and you go from an A-plus to a B really fast. And then the other thing about strengths is, I just wanted to make sure people understood, they are a multiplier. So you learn fastest in your areas of strengths. You have greater intuition in your areas of strengths. Your judgment is better in your areas of strengths. So any input you put into a strength is multiplied. In other areas where you're weaker, you can get incremental improvement. You can. Human beings, we're adaptable creatures. We can learn a lot. But where will you get exponential growth? Where will you have huge leaps of learning? I mean, the same is true for me. I mean, I'm running a business here. I got a whole bunch of people that come to work in my offices every day, and I've got a couple of areas where I am A+. But if I'm not careful, events and people who are blind to where my A-plusness is pull me this way and that way. And if I'm not super careful, I end up in areas where I don't have an edge. I keep putting more training and time into them, but there's no multiplier effect. That's why for you as a leader, you look at the best leaders, and they're so disciplined. And this doesn't mean you don't push yourself. I'm not saying you don't push yourself, but when we say that phrase, push yourself beyond your comfort zone. No, I would change that construction, because if you're not careful, you push yourself beyond your comfort zone and you end up average. Instead, you should push yourself within your strength zone. Do you know where your strengths are, and can you keep pushing yourself to express them in different ways, in different environments? Yes, that's good. That's sensible. That's smart. Push yourself blindly beyond your comfort zone? No, down that path lies mediocrity.
Hmm.
I know it sounds good. Sounds great. But you'll lose.
Yeah, that's a phrase we hear all the time.
You know, get out of your comfort zone and go. And I like the idea of getting in my strength zone.
I don't know. Stay in your strength zone and push there. Like, just how good could you be in there? Just what kind of difference could you make in the world? Just what kind of contribution? Raise your sights there. Because, by the way, in your areas of strength, your sights will be higher. So push yourself. I mean, gosh, yeah, push yourself hard. But do it in a way that is informed by where you know your strengths are. And if you want to experiment a wee bit to see if you can cultivate more strength, I suppose that's fine. But actually, by the time your listeners are listening to this show, they've got their patterns grooved in terms of where their strengths are. And for those of you who are listening who've got kids, I mean, you'll know this. If you've got more than two kids, you know your kids come out different, and then they become more different. They don't come out with no personality. We know our kids have got uniqueness even from the get-go. So when you push yourself blindly, quote-unquote, beyond your comfort zone, if you're not, I mean, unless you're really lucky, you may well end up outside of your strength zone in somebody else's strength zone, and you'll lose.
And now, speaking of kids, I was reading the book, and you talk about your kids, and you talk about this thing of uniqueness or genius. And you've got an interesting way of looking at it. Can you tell our listeners what you mean by our genius?
Well, genius is very, we say that word genius and it's, I don't know, it sounds like it's out of this world. But I have two kids and from the various early age, you've got clues, signs of where their genius lies. I mean, it's a silly example. My daughter didn't talk for a long time, and then when she was three, she talked in whole sentences. And one of the first sentences that she said, not the very first one, but one of the very first complete sentences she said when she was three was, she looked up at my wife when she was leaning over her in bed, and my wife's necklace kind of hung down, and Lilia, my daughter, pointed to it and went, that's a lovely necklace, Mummy. And we both looked at each other because we realized she doesn't want the necklace. She's realized at the age of three that if you say something nice to Mommy now, then in a couple of hours' time, Mommy's going to be more likely to do something nice for you. She'd realized a very sophisticated social concept called reciprocal altruism. She'd realized that if you sow goodwill now, you can reap it later. And then a couple of years later, when she's 6, 7 years old, she comes back and she's written her goals for the upcoming semester. And one of the goals was learn to write better, which is fine. But the second goal was stop fooling the teachers. That was the goal, stop fooling the teachers. And you know, you as a parent, you laugh because, you know, that's funny. But when you peel the onion on that one, you're like, wow, she's figured out really early that people can be fooled, and that you can fool them with goodwill, that you can get them to like you and get them to do things because they like you. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't lots of kids out there who know how to do that, but it was fascinating to us that you go, gosh, very early you're seeing, I mean, because, and every kid's different. I went back to my son and I was like, hey, I think you want to know what one of Lilia's goals was, and I thought he would laugh, and I shared it with him. I said, she said, stop fooling the teachers. And Jack, my son, was like, what? You can fool the teachers? He just had no idea that was even possible, you know, and he's older than she is.
Yes.
So from a very early age, your children show you signs of their genius. So Lily has got a unique ability to see the world, see where people's hearts and heads are in that world, and sow goodwill so people will want to do things for her. I mean, and that's not a boy-girl thing, because there's some boys that have that too and some girls that don't. And my son does not have that. And I don't care how much I try and teach him to have that. He doesn't have that. So as I think about something for Lilia and where her genius will lie, I've got to start with these first clues, these first like signs of where she sees something that not everyone sees, reacts to a situation in a way that not everyone reacts that way. And if it's a repeatable pattern, like it is for her, then I've got to help her understand that if you're going to grow in life, Lydia, you're going to have to find the right way to own that strength of yours and leverage it with courage and compassion and contribution. Because it's not a question of just if you've got a strength, do more of it. It's no, find a way to contribute through it. Lilia, you will always have a unique ability to get to build goodwill around you. Well, you know what? As you grow, Lilia, you should come to own that and understand that. And by the way, it's such a shame, isn't it? There's no class for this in school. I mean, she's getting a bit of it from me just because of what I do, but I'm sure many good parents do this too. You kind of, I'm not saying I'm a good parent, but many parents try and help a child to own and understand how they react to the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a shame that there isn't a class in school that over the course of 10 years would help her to own her way of reacting to the world and understand how that might help her as a student and how she could own and use it as a student and become somebody who really owned their own voice in the world. We don't do any of that. And so when they get into be teenagers, they start trying on other people's voices because they don't really hear their own.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot we could do in school to help children to name, describe, and contribute their strengths.
Yes. Well, listen, I also think that as a to be a great leader, you also need to figure out how to fan the flame of your team strengths as individuals.
Yeah.
And that's going to require that you're in tune. But if I have somebody, Marcus, and they're in the wrong seat of the bus, I realize that I've got somebody doing a job or doing certain responsibilities that are way outside of their strength zone. What do I do as a leader? How can I fix that as a leader and be proactive with it?
Well, so we built this tool where Standout, the assessment is the front door, but the Standout tool itself is a tool to help leaders build the best teams. It's a tool designed to help you pinpoint the strengths of your people and turn those strengths into performance. That's why we built this, to answer the question you just asked, which is when you get a bunch of team members on your team, maybe they're remote too, maybe you're not actually in the same office as them, how the heck do you get to know them well enough to know if they are indeed on the wrong seat on the bus or the right seat on the bus? So the first thing is, I strongly encourage people to be able to figure out what are the strengths of my team. And obviously the standard assessment is one good way to do that. And then the way in which you're going to help people know ongoingly if they're on the right seat on the bus is through weekly. It's this weekly check-in ritual. Informed by the strengths of each person, you should be able to be talking to your people every week and going, what are you working on? What are you working on? What are you working on? Not in a micromanaging way, just in a way that says, what are you working on? How can I help?
Right.
And then over time, you're not going to find this out 6 months from now in performance review time. I mean, right now, every week, you're going to get a sense as a leader, wait a minute, do I keep having to have the same darn conversation with this guy?
Hmm.
I had the same conversation 3 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
I keep trying to get him to raise his sights on this issue, and he doesn't. His sights are set this level of this issue. At some point, after a series of check-ins that are, gosh, he's just not seeing it. At some point, and for the best leaders, by the way, it's pretty soon, they realize that they need to take a hint that this isn't a person who's deliberately not seeing what you're trying to show them. It's a person who's got strengths that don't enable them to see what you're trying to show them. In which case, very soon, you go, you know what? I see these strengths in you, but I keep having this conversation that requires these, and you don't have it. So this strengths philosophy, if you will, although it sounds kind of warm and fuzzy-ish, it actually leads to leaders having tough conversations with people much sooner. Because the underlying philosophy is, I'm not going to change you. And the best leaders know this. I'm not going to rewire your brain. I'm dealing with a fully formed, unique human being, and I've got to figure out the right way to get the right seat on the bus for you. And if you're not in it, which I'm going to discover in the course of these check-ins, if you're not in it, then I'm not going to change you so that you'll fit in it. I've got to get you on a different seat.
Or they have to get on a different bus.
Oh, you got to get on a different bus. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, the best leaders, you know, you ask the best leaders and they'll say, I've never fired someone too soon.
Hmm.
It's like they're always aware, gosh, I'm just a little too late. I'm a little too late. And I'm not saying you should be out like Al Chainsaw Dunlap firing people left, right, and center. That's not the takeaway. But boy, they do realize that if you let someone languish in the wrong seat on the wrong bus, that's not caring. It's cowardly.
Hmm. Wow.
The caring thing, although it's tough, right?
It is
tough. The caring
thing
is to go, you're a good person on the wrong bus.
Hmm.
And that's a strength move. That is a strength move, because it's saying you've got some, but they're not manifesting on this bus, or at least on this seat on this bus.
And I'm going to tell you, that's one of the things, the area of courage is something that we're really lacking in business today, because leaders don't want to be uncomfortable and have those conversations.
Right. And I think it's because they don't have the language. You know?
Okay.
If you believe that anyone can be anything, and a person is not performing on the seat on the bus, then your logic forces you to believe that the person is not performing because they're deliberately not choosing to. They're being deliberately obstructionist and not doing what you want them to do. So by the force of your own logic, it's kind of tough to have the kind of conversation where you say to someone, look, I'm moving you off the seat on this bus because I keep telling you what to do and you deliberately keep not doing it. That's a tough conversation. An easier conversation is one that's underpinned with an understanding that everyone has different strengths. Different strengths means that you see the world a little differently, which means if you as a leader keep saying something to someone and they just don't get it, they're not deliberately not getting it. They just have different strengths than you thought they had. In which case, the tough conversation with them is you saying, hey, I know you're a good person with unique strengths and all, but I need you to have a view of the world or some strengths that you don't have. And that's not your fault. It's actually my fault. I put you on the seat in the bus in the first place. But we do have to move you out of it because I'm not going to get the performance I want from you. I'm not saying that's an easy conversation, but it's easier than one where your logic forces you to believe the person's not performing because they're deliberately choosing not to.
Right. Well, and you said to let that person languish there is actually being unkind. And I think if you start to think of it in those terms, you're doing them a favor by having that conversation. You're doing them a favor putting them in their strength zone.
Yeah. Well, and that's not just playing with words. I mean, you are doing them a favor. People want to fit the seat they're in. But sometimes they end up in the wrong seat, but they don't have the pride or they don't have the language to get them out of it.
Mm.
And you need to help them. But you are helping them. It might not look like it. You know, tomorrow they might run up to you in the parking lot and be really grumpy. But many a leader has had someone come up 6 months later and go, you know what? It didn't feel like it at the time, but thank you. Thank you for helping me make a move that I wouldn't have made by myself.
Mm. Well, Marcus, listen, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us. I want you all to know out there that you can get Marcus's book, Standout, at all the places you buy books these days. But you can also check out Marcus's website on tmbc.com. And Marcus, do you have other ways people can connect with you?
Well, yes. I mean, I'm on Twitter and Facebook and stuff. But I think probably the easiest way to find this Standout tool for team leaders, which is what it is, it's a way to build better teams, is just to Google Standout. Google Standout, take you right there, and you'll see whether or not this is something that'll help you do what the best leaders do. If you're interested in doing what the best leaders do, we've tried to build a tool to help you do that. Nothing will replace the fabulous, genuine, authentic interactions you have with your people, but we hope to build a tool that was built around what the best leaders do. And so if you're interested in that, Google Standout, and it'll take you right there.
Fantastic. Marcus Buckingham, thank you for taking the time to join us, and we look forward to having you back again in the future.
Well, my great pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Take care now.
Take care.
Wow. This whole area of strengths is something that as leaders, as small business owners, it's something we have to really think about. We have to begin to understand, how is our team wired? What are their strengths? And to be able to help them to operate in their strengths for the sake of the team, but also for themselves. Because a lot of them, they don't know, or they may not have the courage to make the change. So as entree leaders out there, you're going to have to be proactive in having these conversations. Another huge takeaway from spending time with Marcus today was making sure you're having those one-on-one meetings. Sitting down with people and asking them the two questions: what are you working on and how can I help you? And if you make that intentional, that conversation, that connection, you're going to establish relationship. And now you're going to be able to get information from those individuals that you may not have been able to get before, all because now you have relationship. Marcus, thank you again for taking the time to join us. I want you all out there to be able to send me your questions.
I'm getting Don, and he's getting me riled up to be able to get together and do a Q&A session. So I need you to send me your questions. Email your questions to podcasts@entreleadership.com, and always head over to entreleadership.com and join the conversation. As you know, we've built a community for the small business owner. We've built a community for the leaders. That's a place where you can go and get connected and feel like you're staying on top of your game so you can sharpen your edge. Listen, stay plugged into this Entree Leadership stuff. Keep learning and keep leading. And until next time, grow yourself, grow your team, and grow your profits.